You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Welcome to an all-new episode of the Apple Insider Podcast. It is I, Victor Marks, and I'm here with Mikey Campbell, the esteemed editor of AppleInsider.com. Mikey, welcome.
Good to be back.
I want to start by talking about the Department of Justice. We sort of know that the FBI bought a license to use Cellebrite's technology.
Perhaps.
Well, they issued a purchase order to them.
Yeah, but, I mean, we don't know, no.
We know that they issued a purchase order. We don't know if that's what they used.
Mm-hmm.
But they paid the money.
Of course, don't they already do business with Cellebrite, though? So we don't know if it's for that particular iPhone. I also believe Apple does business with them, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway.
The same day they wrote the purchase order to Cellebrite, they also bought a license for Blacklight to analyze the data they were getting.
Mm, yep.
And in fact, it seems like they issued a whole ton of purchase orders for forensic security-related applications after this whole All Writs Act kerfuffle.
Interesting how they did that after they said they exhausted all avenues.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The other thing that I'm finding interesting is this sort of back and forth, right? You know, it's as if the FBI is saying, you should totally do it, Apple. It's just one phone. And Apple says, no, it isn't. And then the FBI says, we got in. And Apple says, you should say how. It's just one phone. And what's the FBI's response to that?
No, it's not.
No, it isn't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's the FBI. What are they going to do? They need to get into the phone. And I think it's pretty clear that it's not just about one phone, despite what they say in court and in front of a
Congress,
Senate Select Committee. They're behind the curve when it comes to digital forensics. Loretta Lynch, AG, said as much in an interview. Right? I mean, she said that digital evidence gathering is becoming the de facto norm for most investigations in the U.S. So. They need to develop these tools that can get into phones like the iPhone and Android and other smartphones that are popular with the general public. And it seems like they haven't been keeping up with the modern technology. Whether that's a funding issue or whether it's something, I don't know, whether something else is unclear. But
yeah.
I think it's obvious that they don't have the capabilities to do so on their own.
Yeah, you keep using the word need. I like the idea of using the word want instead.
Well, how are they going to get into the? How are they going to get this information?
They want to get into the iPhone. They want to be able to. I don't know that.
It is their directive to gather evidence, right?
Right, but
so they need to get into the phone.
Well, not necessarily, because there are all kinds of situations where, and the law accounts for the fact that evidence is simply unavailable.
Right. But in some cases,
they can't always have it.
I suppose. I think in this case,
ISA, Daryl ISA, congressman, tweeted relatively recently, tweeted as recently as yesterday.
Yeah.
We have to find the right way to protect innovators from unreasonable government intrusion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, legislators are just as much to blame for current state of affairs as the Justice Department. Justice Department is only working off of what they can do within legal boundaries, right?
Not necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they had to leverage the all writs. They had to go around.
They fell back on that because they wanted to go around what Congress has not just failed to do, but absolutely declined to do, right?
Yeah,
Congress didn't want to give them the power, so then they tried to backdoor the power through the courts.
Right, so I'm saying the legislators are as much to blame as the FBI.
We don't need a law to bar the FBI from doing stuff. We just don't need to write the law to allow them. And the FBI decides to go and do this anyway.
I don't know if
the
argument is to allow them.
We're allowed it. And we're angry about.
I don't know if it's that Congress needs to write a law saying, like one way or another that.
That was one of the points that some of the congressmen made chewing out Director Comey over.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That entire hearing was kind of a fiasco. So,
probably the most entertaining thing I've ever seen on CNET, though.
I suppose. It was also kind of dry. But, I mean, aside from the grandstanding from a couple senators,
yeah,
I don't think it really got anything done. But back to the topic of whether or not Apple should have or, you know, might soon be compelled to break into one of their own devices, there needs to be some sort of discussion in Congress or in the Senate or the House as to whether that is deemed legal and where the boundaries are, because there aren't any right now. And I don't know. I don't know where to even start. The technology has already advanced to such a stage where a simple discussion is there's no real jumping off point for that anymore. You just have to. I mean, it's surpassed the point of simply broaching the subject. We have to deal with it proactively. But I don't know. The FBI just this week, right, as the media was all over the Arkansas case, double homicide, supposedly Little Rock field offices lending a hand in accessing data from iPhone 6 and an iPod, probably an iPod Touch, but they didn't release that info. So I don't think in that case that I don't think the FBI is going to put their little baby in jeopardy for an Arkansas murder conviction. But at the same time, it does raise the question, when are they going to attempt to use this exploit again, right? It has to be coming.
It seems to me that if the FBI can purchase this exploit, then Apple should be able to purchase it and reverse engineer it as well.
I suppose, but is it in Cellebrite or whoever sold them the exploit's interest to do so?
That is a good question. No, it would be interesting to me if someone approached Cellebrite posing as a customer saying, I have an iPhone 5C. Can I purchase the ability to access it and see how far they got?
It is business versus government in that case. And at least part of the reason where this whole thing gets sticky to begin with, it's Apple's a private company and the government was trying to compel them to basically divulge industry secrets in the name of national security. Can it be done in reverse? I don't know.
So what's the big takeaway from all of this?
It's not over by any means, and we're going to be talking about this for probably at least a few more years. I've seen stories that, you know, that the whole thing is the FBI versus Apple thing is done. It's not done. That case is done. The San Bernardino case is done, which was probably the FBI's best chance to convince Apple to hand over their encryption technology willingly or, you know, through a court order. But now that they don't need to do that, at least for the iPhone 5C, as far as we know, who knows what the exploit is. It could be applied to newer versions as well. But this is just going to keep going. I mean, it's going to be a cat and mouse game, right? Apple's going to make a new encryption method. FBI's or law enforcement agencies are going to want to be granted access to that. Apple's going to make iCloud more secure, taking away the iCloud backup route for law enforcement. So law enforcement's going to want something to work around those roadblocks. It's just going to be a back and forth, I think, for a very long time, as long as, you know, tech industry keeps innovating. But, yeah, so I don't know. It's just something that we're going to be talking about for...
Yes. Well, hopefully we'll catch a break and not have to talk about it 1 week here on the podcast. Or if we do have to talk about it, hopefully something slightly more interesting comes up. Because watching this thing develop has been a train wreck in slow motion.
Personally, I think that the FBI chose the wrong company to mess with. And they definitely chose the wrong method. I mean, they wanted to wage a PR battle with arguably one of the most powerful PR apparatus in the entire world, right?
Well, Katie Cotton isn't around, so it's not the most powerful, but...
Well, not iron-fisted, but it is... they do have a vast machine and have... they have a deep pool from which to pull.
Yes.
In shaping public opinion, as it were.
You know, early on when this was going on and someone was telling me online how how Apple picked the wrong fight here and that Apple was going to lose this. I responded by saying at the time that people like their iPhones a lot more than they like Congress. That the approval rating of Apple is a lot higher than the approval rating of anyone in the federal government. And of course, that's a rather silly remark to make, but there's some truth to it.
Yeah, I found it funny during the hearing that so many of these senators whipped out their iPhone.
Well, every one of them wants to have one, but not only because it's a good device, but because they know that the FBI can't spy on them.
Well, it is that specific committee had them issued, right? To them.
Right.
But it's funny that
I thought most of the congressmen were issued iPhones after they stopped issuing BlackBerries.
Yes. Well, it depends on. I think that I don't know the procurement policies, but I think each has to. I mean, they have to go through. They have to vet it, right?
Right.
But it's interesting that
ID department for Congress and purchasing right. department, and they approve which device gets purchased. But I thought iPhone was on that list.
It is for some. Committees and some senators, but I think a lot of them use multiple devices, obviously, as seen by Hillary Clinton.
Oh,
yeah, but
well, she wanted her BlackBerry and she got it in the worst way.
Yep. Well, I wish I could start my own server farm for personal correspondence too. That'd be great.
Hopefully, you'd
nothing top secret
better
though,
than hers.
Yes.
Speaking of you know. Being able to get into devices. Chipworks published a teardown of the new iPhone SE.
Indeed they did.
And
as expected, it's like a mashup of iPhone 5S, 6, and 6S technology with a few new parts sprinkled in for good measure.
Right, and Chipworks said they likened it to an old Chevrolet outfitted with a peppy new Corvette engine.
Yeah, and from what I hear, that's pretty accurate. Our colleague Neil has a SE, and he said it's basically a faster 5S. Aside from the Touch ID module, which is a first gen, you're not going to see that ultra fast unlocking like you do on the 6S, which is once you get used to it, it's kind of hard to go back.
But it does support Apple Pay.
Yep, supports Apple Pay. What else does it have? Has a new comms chip in it. Audio is the same, I think.
So there's the A9 processor. There's 2 gig of RAM. Same as the iPhone 6S.
Mm-hmm. Toshiba RAM.
Toshiba RAM. The NFC chip and the secure element are still there. The same one as the 6S. Let's see, the access controller, the accelerometer was the 6S.
I think it's isn't it integrated now? It's accelerometer plus
XYZ
stuff.
Roll, pitch, and yaw. Normally you'd have a 3-axis accelerometer, but this is a 6-axis inertial sensor.
Yeah, I think they started using that in the 6S. I think prior to that, there was a combination accelerometer plus stuff.
It's got gyro. The wireless modems, the Qualcomm modem and RF transceivers are the ones out of the iPhone 6.
It's when they expanded the coverage, so you got that going. I mean, this thing is shaping up to be basically what we thought it would be, right? When the rumors first.
Well, we sort of assumed that it would be a 5S shape with all the goods in it.
Yeah, they just wanted. Well, at the time, I mean, we thought that Apple was looking to satiate people like Neil who love the 4-inch form factor and keep crabbing about the 4.5.
Let's be clear. Tim Cook and Johnny Ive listened to the podcast. And
it's true.
They heard Neil griping. They heard Neil's. They felt Neil's pain.
No, they obviously did this to accommodate Donald Trump.
Oh God, no, they didn't.
He has small hands.
I'm not going there. They did this to because they felt Neil's pain, and they wanted to relieve Neil's pain.
No, they wanted to make it worse because they would give him what he wanted, but
in the worst way possible.
But they would not offer it in a 120 gigabyte configuration, so he can't use it.
He was telling me that he had to ditch like 50 gig of stuff. He offloaded all of his videos to Dropbox, and he moved all of his photos to compressed ones, and he had to ditch so many applications.
Yeah.
I told him the housekeeping was good for him.
I don't know why he has so much stuff on his device. It's weird.
I can't speak. I have too much stuff on my device as well. But
I have everything offloaded sync to either like Dropbox or my own Synology cloud.
Mm-hmm. How large of storage is your Synology?
Not too big, just like 4 terabytes, I think.
Oh, not too large. Only four terabytes.
Considering I store movies on there and stuff too, so
yeah,
it's not just like photos and text messages.
Someday soon, I'll tell you about the Synology router that I've been using.
Oh yeah, it's the world's most accessible and fastest, securest router ever.
It's pretty slow to boot up.
I heard good reviews.
It's pretty slow to boot up. Otherwise, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I just have my old AirPort Extreme.
I'm not using this. I'm using an, what is that? It's a TP-Link, and if it's not the TP-Link, then it's probably Netgear. I've got a few that I cycle through.
Why? Exactly.
I'll tell you later.
Right.
Yeah, although the Synology is pretty interesting because they have an app store for it.
Synology app store is pretty robust.
It's got some intriguing choices. So this iPhone SE, I just want to ask you. So we all knew Neil was going to get one. There was no question. Everyone knew that this was the phone for Neil. Mm-hmm. Are you going to get one?
No. I do like the 4-inch form factor. I thought it was a really good size, and I thought the 5S was probably one of Apple's best iPhones. It was solid. And it was light, and it worked one-handed. And I mean, the 4.5 inch offers you another row of apps, and it's a little easier to read on. But really, I'm not doing much of that on my phone. I have an iPad, or I'll just go to a computer if I need to. I don't really see. For me, there's really no appeal to go back down to a smaller form factor. Yeah, so I just don't feel like I would be okay with the concessions that they made, or that, you know, they built in to the SE that I need a fast touch ID because I'm so used to it now. Yeah. I hate it on the iPad Pro. I always like just kind of tap the home button and it doesn't unlock, and I always get so frustrated. I know I hear myself saying that and I'm irritated.
Send your iPad Pro here.
No, but I mean, look.
Let me take that problem off your hands.
Apple spoils me with these new gizmos, and when they come out with something new that doesn't have the new stuff, it's kind of disappointing. But that being said, there is a one old 4-inch iPhone feature that I do miss, and that's an accurate soft keyboard. Have you noticed that? Once they move up to the 6 and the 6S, they had the predictive input, they changed the hitboxes on the soft keyboard. And I don't know why they did that, but it's less accurate for me.
You mean the amount of touch target?
Mm-hmm. Like, it's adaptive now, right? It adapts based on the predictive...
The length of the word?
Yeah, well, I think that it links to the predictive text function. So it'll kind of predict what you're going to type, and it'll make certain key targets larger to facilitate faster typing. But I find that predictive text is not totally accurate, so I often end up typing incorrect things. Mm. And it's frustrating. When the 4-inch iPhone, it was more of a one-to-one kind of thing. They didn't try to adapt it on the fly. And right. I guess I'm either used to that or it's a better method. I don't know if other people are also having this issue. But I noticed my typing speed and accuracy have greatly diminished since the 6 came out.
That's interesting because when I've used the 6 now for a good long while, a year and a half, and if I try and use the 5 at this time, mm-hmm. I find it hard to type.
I had to go back to the 5S. I had the 9.3 beta running on that, and I was typing a lot faster and with greater accuracy.
On which one?
On the 5S.
Well, so Mikey, this tears it. You need the SE.
Just so I can type rude tweets out faster with with greater accuracy
and greater rudeness.
Exactly. Well, you have to reach peak rudeness. You have to have the SE, I guess.
You have to have the SE, and you'll send your iPad Pro here, and it'll be perfect.
I don't know what this has to do with my iPad Pro.
You brought it up. It's the Touch ID. It's blocking it.
Well, yes, but it has huge hitboxes for the keys. So I have no problem with it.
Good. Yeah. So who do you think the iPhone SE is for besides you and Neil?
What the research suggests that it's a lot more Android switchers than previously thought. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, these studies and reports, they don't take into account the fact that, you know, it's a much lower volume of handsets being sold compared to like a flagship 6S or a 7. And while there's, you know, a greater percentage per capita of people, or not per capita, but per, you know, buyer coming from Android, it's not really enough to move the needle. But I do think that Apple is targeting burgeoning markets with this device. Obviously, places like India, where they recently made a bunch of changes to their iPhone lineup. They cut prices, and then they replaced the, I believe it was the 4S completely. Mm-hmm. I think they stopped selling that model. Yeah. But I mean, for a long time, they wouldn't even address those markets, right? They were having a field day with growth in developed nations. Like, North America has been saturated for years, but certain regions of Europe and Asia, Japan especially, in the past couple of years, they were just raking in the dough, and now they have to go fight down market. Yeah, and that's like kind of a thing.
This thing, the SE price point is $399, isn't it?
Here it is.
Here it is.
But, depending on what model, right?
Fair.
But it is a bit. It is more expensive than if you take into account the exchange rate and all that. It is more expensive in, say, China. But compared to Android offerings there, I think it's pretty.
Well, like, I mean, to be clear, you can get Android offerings that are dirt cheap.
Right. Well, yeah,
you can get a phone,
but you can't get the premium feel of an Apple device,
or the premium support.
I don't know if people really care about the support.
They care that their software works, right?
Do they? Is that why they've been going with Android for so long?
Let me tell you about an Android story that I can. It's a personal anecdote. It's not data. It's an anecdote.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, someone close to me had a Moto E second gen 2015 device.
I'm sorry.
And was using it all during the day next to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then went home and put the phone on the kitchen counter and phoned me from the home phone, which I thought was unusual, to say that the Motorola had booted into a recovery mode and that its boot log said that the something like the boot image could not be validated.
All right.
And, you know, I looked into it a little bit and said, you know what, we can try and flash this thing again through Fastboot, but go ahead and call Motorola and ask them what they think you should do. And Motorola's answer was that the best they could do for him, the second best they could do for him, what they recommended was that he send them the device and then wait for about 20 days without a phone, and they would ship him back a working one.
Sounds legit. You don't need a phone for a
month. Not really, no. And he said, well, what other options do you have? And the other option was you pay $25 for the privilege of them sending you a phone. No. The first arrangement was you have to ship yours first, and when they receive it, then they get around to sending it. So you're still without a phone for that length of time. You pay $25 for the privilege of cross-shipping.
No.
You ship yours first, and they ship at the same time. And he said, well, for $25, are you going to overnight it? No. No, we will send it ground 5 days.
Well, to be fair, Motorola is still stuck in the 19th century.
Well, the Moto E was the one where they promised that you would absolutely get updates, and then they reneged on that promise and said, no, you won't get updates. And then they treat you like this. And the person in question lives about a mile from an Apple store.
So what did he end up doing?
I ended up paying the $25 and cross-shipping his Moto E. I figure in a few years when the Moto E dies for good and Moto won't help him anymore, that I will try and direct him.
Out of business completely.
Yeah. Well, we'll see about that. But at that time, all of the phones that are currently Motos will just be branded Lenovo, right?
Yeah. I remember the time when one lusted after a Motorola phone.
Yeah, Razer.
I really wanted one.
I had one. I had two.
Lucky.
Sold them for like $60.
I think my first cell phone was a Motorola Flip, not a StarTAC, whatever it was before that. I don't know what their naming nomenclature was back then.
StarTAC was the first really good one.
Yeah.
As a flip.
How dare you? I enjoyed my flip phone.
I'm sure you did.
And it lasted for at least 45 minutes.
That's okay, Mikey. It's okay to have enjoyed that.
It's the days when you would carry around extra batteries.
Those days were so long ago. And in fact, if you go into the airport, there are stores that sell spare batteries to this day. For Samsung.
Not for old flip phones, but for
Samsung.
Oh, well. I'm sure they would do it for Apple if Apple allowed people to change their battery in any of their devices.
No kidding. So tell me about this smart connector patent. One of the things Neil loves, we're talking a lot about Neil here, is he loves the smart connector.
Of course he does.
Well, he has these grand visions for you doing other things besides the keyboard with the smart connector.
I thought we established that the smart connector is kind of gimped, at least in its current form.
He dreams.
Okay. Well, his dreams are not going to become reality this generation.
Yet.
So maybe one day.
What's in the patent?
Basically, it's a patent for stackable plugs. So let's say you have a iPad Pro. And you want to connect a keyboard and, say, a battery pack, and also, for some odd reason, a spinning disk drive or something. I don't know. External storage of some sort.
Right.
Currently, there's really no way to do it simultaneously, so...
Well, you plug in a lightning connector with one thing and then stack another lightning connector into that female's lightning connector and so forth. And that doesn't work.
Yes. Yeah, so this patent is basically saying that you can stack connectors using the smart connector, which has two-way data and power, right? With three pins, and you can stack these plugs one on top of the other, and it will intelligently parse out all the information from each thing and let you operate 2, 3, 4 devices at one time. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool. So imagine, if you will, that the current smart keyboard, you can stack on top of that like a battery case, kind of like the iPhone battery case. But instead of connecting via Lightning, it'll connect on the smart connector side. And you'll still be able to attach a keyboard. Mm-hmm. So it has implications to expand iPad's ecosystem vastly, right? One of the drawbacks that people always cite of iPad is that it's a lack of expandability. It's not as versatile as a laptop computer. So this could go a long way in addressing those concerns. But who knows if it's ever going to come out. Probably not.
It's like the prototype original iPad that had 230-pin connectors.
Yeah, right. I don't know. Apple has grand visions of a time when you won't need wires at all, right? Everything's going to be connected wirelessly. I don't know if they're going to invest in something that's not contactless. I mean, they're even moving to wireless charging now, right? And I'm all for that, as long as it can be done in an efficient way and in a way that actually works. because charging my Apple Watch for an hour or a couple hours or whatever, you know, it's obviously not as efficient as plugging in my iPhone with a wired connector. Mm-hmm. So the technology is not quite there for wireless charging, but it is there for wireless data, and that is what iPad and iPhone use now, and that rely on the most, and they're kind of moving further in that direction. So we shall see.
Now, we just got done talking about all of the things that led up to the iPhone SE. We did that last week, and we recapped it a little bit with what's inside of it this week. What's the new iPhone rumor?
Oh, the new iPhone. Well,
because I mean, I want a new iPhone. What's the
well? Then you might have to wait until. Do you want AMOLED?
AMOLED has its benefits and drawbacks.
Well, according to Mr. Ming-Chi Kuo, who people love to hate, for some reason, I don't know why, he's been very accurate in the past. I've heard him called a charlatan.
That's interesting, given the things that he brings us.
It is interesting.
Anyway, who is he misleading, I wonder?
I don't know. He's been very accurate in the past. And
has he just pulled the wool over our eyes and we don't know it? The
perhaps. I don't know. So in any case, he's saying that we should expect an AMOLED iPhone in 2017, which is interesting because Apple is expected to revamp the iPhone design to take advantage of OLED's ability to be flexible, right? So perhaps a curved screen of some sort, partially curved,
but
to facilitate edge to edge.
Curved screens already exist.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, there's the Samsung S7 Edge, right?
Okay. S6 aside from the Edge. Gimmicks that Samsung uses for their smartphones, there are some very beneficial properties that can be gleaned from using an OLED screen, which one, for example, is an edge-to-edge display, which would be awesome. A true edge-to-edge, where
are you suggesting the Samsung one is not an edge-to-edge display?
There's a bezel on the side.
But it's down on the side now.
Yeah, but it's still there.
All right.
Anyway, so if you want an OLED iPhone, perhaps 2017 is going to be the year, but that's going to be, if their naming convention continues, this year is going to be a 7, next year is going to be a 7S, which means there's going to be no aesthetic design change next year, except Kuo is saying that, yes, they are going to release an OLED model. But the catch is that it's going to be only one, and it could either replace the top end 7 Plus and, you know, further differentiate that. No. 7. It could be like a 7S Plus.
7S Plus.
So in that case, it would be like, no. So in that case, it would be like they would have the 6S for free, then like the 7S, which would be a redesign coming out next year. It's the 7, which is based on the 7. No, I'm sorry. 7S next year, which is based on the 7 that will be released this year, plus another model that has an AMOLED display and new design, which Kuo says is going to be curved not only on the display side, but also the back. You know how Apple loves symmetry. So that's what it is. Oh, he kind of describes it as a 4 series, except a next generation 4. Remember the glass sandwich?
Okay.
So it's going to be that, except with a thinner antenna ring or antenna surround and curved on both sides.
And supposedly. When do you think I can have this thing?
2017 fall, probably. So depending on AMOLED, how much stock Apple can pile up. Could be in addition to the 7S and 7S Plus, or it could just completely take the place of the 7S Plus. So in either case, it's going to muddy Apple's lineup if indeed they do launch it in 2017. But I mean, I do have a soft spot for OLED displays simply because of the color saturation it can achieve and its ability for power savings, which will be excellent, hopefully, unless Apple continues with the full white UI, in which case OLED
savings will be minimal.
Yeah, or the reverse of power savings.
Right.
Assumption.
That other thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I mean, I do like the idea of that, and I don't really care about curved displays. I think they're kind of gimmicky. I haven't really seen a use case that really made a compelling argument as to why the display should be curved. But I am kind of excited for it. And I don't know if I will buy it, though. If it is going to replace the 7S Plus and that it's supposed to be a 5.8-inch display, and I am not a fan of humongous
even
phones.
Bigger phone.
Yeah, it's going to be, well, it would be Apple's biggest phone, right? 0.3 inches larger than the Plus.
Yeah.
So a true phablet.
My idea is to get on the iPhone, the Apple upgrade plan. You know, purchase my phones directly through Apple, and when such a thing becomes available, I will strongly consider it.
Still probably going to have to pay through the nose.
Well, you know, it's like 30 or 40 a month.
It's too rich for my blood.
Is it? Then I will reconsider. But it's there's something alluring about that.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting smarter about who to sell to and how to sell to them. But we shall see. This quarter is supposed to bring the first drop year-over-year iPhone sales. So you have to do something to accommodate the Wall Street doomsdayers.
You know, at some point it just boggles my mind that they never realize that every time they predict doom, they're mistaken.
Well, I mean, one year they're going to have to be right.
You know, they always say, well, it's overvalued this, or it's over, it can't earn any more. Well,
it's all about growth. It's all about growth.
Really?
I found it amusing that Fortune didn't include Tim Cook in their top, was it top 40 CEOs? Top 30?
Really?
Hey, Apple relies far too much on the iPhone for profit.
Well, I suppose that's true, but that's because they're the only ones selling computers that are profitable.
I don't see...
Computers aren't that profitable anymore.
It's kind of the same thing as saying Exxon only is largely tied to oil sales. I don't know. It makes little sense to me. What companies have such a divested product line that they can say we're bringing in equal amounts of money for each of our disgustingly successful devices and or product offerings?
I don't know. I still like the idea of the big phone with the AMOLED and the curved screen. All that sounds wonderful. I will take two, please.
One for each paw.
Absolutely. One for each pocket on my JNCOs.
Wow. You gotta double fist that.
This isn't, you know, so I was just reading Jonathan Zajarski's. You know his tweets, right? He published a blog entry about how Apple can make their FBI problems go away.
How is that?
Well, he's talking about the concept of a trusted boot process.
Oh.
You know about that?
Yeah, I saw him mention that earlier today.
Right. So he says that it hasn't been defeated in years. It's sensible to add it as a layer in front of the OS. And basically, the trusted boot process sits in front of the operating system. And the operating system is completely dark until proper authentication has been completed. It prevents RAM disk, it prevents firmware, it prevents anything from booting until the device has been authenticated. So you'd add like a complex boot password that's way more complex than your day-to-day password. And, you know, because you don't reboot your phone all the time, right? Your phone is almost always on, yeah?
But wouldn't that just create more of a headache for Apple, who has to jump through even more hoops to open a phone for the FBI?
Well, that's just it, is that it wouldn't be any more hoops. It would be just simply no.
I don't know. No, I mean, that possible. can be...
You're thinking that would be more hoops because it would be more much you have to make it possible. Well, if it's just completely and totally impossible, tough.
Nothing is impossible, Victor.
A device would not be able to boot any firmware, even that signed by Apple, in the event of a successful All Writs Act order someday.
What's interesting is about, I think he tweeted something today that I didn't know, is that Apple has ability to flash the secure enclave.
Mm-hmm.
So basically that opens it up to a brute force if you do it correctly. I mean, it'll take a long time. But
yeah. I'm kind of the whole idea of this trusted boot process that he proposes is appealing to me.
Yeah. How many people are going to get locked out of their phones, though?
Should the user forget their boot password, they can be given the option of wiping the device and restoring it back to an unlocked state.
They lose all that precious data, all their cat pictures and stuff.
Pick your poison.
I don't know.
You're already out of luck if you'd forget your device password.
Yeah.
Right? Your option then is to restore the device. So the same thing's true for this proposed boot password.
But it makes it even more difficult, right?
Not really. I mean, if you just...
Some people have four, you know, six pin, whatever. Do you use alphanumeric?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, people like you who use like six pin or four pin,
I'm on the
whatever.
Four digits at the moment. I'm going to change that real soon now.
So yeah. So I mean, definitely people like you who do four pin. Are people like you going to write down
their, I could do a really long 10 digit one. I could do a 10 placeholder one or a 12 placeholder one as long as I only ever had to use that at boot time. Any other time I could use a short one.
I don't know. I'm not an encryption expert, but so I can't attest to the veracity of either argument. I will say that Touch ID makes it a lot easier. Prior to Touch ID, I don't think I lock my device. I hardly lock my device. Yeah.
You know, there were always people that I knew of that were jerks that would, you know, if your device didn't have a passcode on it.
Oh, they would put on, yeah.
They would pick it up and put one on there for you, and then you'd be, yeah, jerks. You know, they thought they were funny.
That's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. It is to them.
Yeah.
But I've used the four-digit because passcode, using Touch ID required putting on a four-digit, at least. And I do like Touch ID.
Touch ID is good stuff. Remember when people said it wouldn't work?
People say lots of stuff. I also like Apple Pay quite a lot. And Touch ID and Apple Pay.
I can only use Apple Pay. The only place I go to regularly that I can use Apple Pay is Petco.
Petco?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's basically the only place that accepts it here. Huh. I don't go to Whole Foods.
Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, Walgreens.
Don't go to Walgreens.
I've used it in a bunch of places.
Well, good for you for living on the mainland.
My physician.
Really?
My physician's office will do it. And, you know, they say, well, you'd like to pay your copay or whatever it is. And I say, sure. And I take out my phone and they go, oh, you're one of those. And they punch it in on their pin pad and it's ready to go.
They're not going through Square?
No.
They
have pin pads.
Wow.
Yeah. The tire shop can do it. The place where I get tires on my car does it. The health food store that's a local thing, not a big chain like Whole Foods, they do it. I got a lot of places around me that will take Apple Pay.
Hmm.
But Petco.
Petco is the go-to place for me.
Hmm. Well, I'm glad that the iPhone SE is there because it means that there will be more people able to use Apple Pay. And I think the faster we can get everywhere using Apple Pay instead of the stupid chip cards, the better off we'll all be.
The better off Apple users will be.
Well, everyone else will have to catch up with Android Pay.
Yep.
But this is the problem, right? Because I have, so my bank supports Apple Pay, finally. Took them long enough, but they finally got in there. And so I can do that with my credit union. I tried to set up a Nexus 6P with Android Pay, and the same financial institution that supports Apple does not support Android.
Hmm.
So there's two wrinkles here, right? There's having Android users have the adoption to do it, but there's also their financial institutions have to get on board.
Well, of course. That's why you should use Samsung Pay.
Oh. The magnetic waves sending technology?
Look, it's amazing, all right? And it's accepted everywhere.
Except that swipe is deprecated, right? So the magnets are deprecated.
We're living in the now, okay? We're living in the now.
Yeah.
Not the future.
Wish people would hurry up and catch up to the future.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. I mean, the rollout for chip card has been horrendous.
Yeah, I see. Well, we have the readers here, but they're not active.
Are you kidding me?
It's funny. They have the new readers, right?
The slots have to be active by now.
The Ingenico or whatever.
Right, Ingenico and Verifone.
I've seen the Ingenico ones with index cards in the slot saying the chip is not active.
Oh gosh!
Don't stick your card in here.
Put your card in here. Yeah, everywhere I go in Target or Whole Foods or Trader Joe's, there are all these cards that are taped up next to them telling you the steps to insert your card. And don't pull it out too soon, because if you pull it out too soon, it reboots their point of sale.
Don't you have to leave it in for the whole thing?
You leave it in for the entire transaction. But see, the problem is that we were trained for years, if you were using a gas pump, to just insert and remove quickly.
Yeah. Well, for everything, right?
Right.
A swipe.
Yeah.
A swipe it, you don't leave it in. We're such dumb creatures. We can't learn these
things. No. We got trained, and then they want to break our user expectations, and they were convinced there would be no problems at all with this.
Yep. They were wrong.
Yes.
Dead wrong.
Dead wrong. I'm Victor Marks, and you can follow me on Twitter at vmarks. You can also find my work on appleinsider.com. Mikey Campbell, who joins us, is MikeyCampbell81 on Twitter, and also available at appleinsider.com. Join us next week for more news about iPad, iPhone, Mac, and more.